A small herd of zebra that had been grazing on the grass strip scattered at their approach and plunged away at full gallop. Each of them towed a feather of pale dust behind it. "Damn donkeys," Gary muttered. "Hit one of those and he'll take your wing off." Below her, Isabella saw an open truck parked near the crude windsock. She looked for her elder brother at the wheel, but it was one of his black drivers. She felt a tingle of disappointment. She hadn't seen Sean in over 2 years, and she missed him. Gary turned the twin-engine Beechcraft onto final approach and lined up with the strip. He lowered the undercarriage, and three green lights lit up on the dashboard. His hands were powerful and sure on the controls as he completed his landing checks and brought her in at a single steep angle to avoid the treetops that crowded the strip. "He's a marvellous pilot," Isabella admired his technique, "almost as good as Pater." Gary had flown them up from Johannesburg in the company jet. They had stayed over in Salisbury at the Monomotapa Hotel. Shaza and Gary had had a meeting with Ian Smith, the Rhodesian Prime Minister. Then they had flown this last leg in the smaller Beechcraft. The jet needed 1,000 metres of metalled runway to make a safe landing, whereas the twin-engine Beechcraft could sneak into the short grass strip at Chisora with a skillful pilot at the controls. It was a full-flap landing, and Gary set her down firmly, no float or bounce. The machine jolted and pitched to the rough surface. He thrust on maximum safe braking as the wall of trees at the far end of the strip rushed towards them. Then he wheeled her with another burst of engine and taxied in a blown dust devil to where the truck waited for them. The camp staff swarmed around the Beechcraft the moment that Gary cut the motors. Shaza opened the hatch and jumped down off the wing to shake their hands and greet each one of them in strict order of seniority. Most of the safari staff had been with the company from the beginning, and so Shaza knew each of them by name. The pleasure of the camp staff was even greater when Isabella jumped down off the wing, and those marvellous white African smiles stretched to the limit. Although her visits to Chisora were intermittent, she was a firm favourite amongst them. They called her Kwezi, the morning star. "I have fresh tomatoes and lettuce for you, Kwezi," Lot, the head gardener, assured her. The garden at Chisora camp was fertilised with buffalo and elephant dung and yielded fruit and vegetables that would have won prizes at any agricultural show. They all knew Kwezi's weakness for salads.
"I put your tent at the end, Kwezi," Isaac, the camp butler, told her, "so you can listen to the birds in the morning. Chef has got your special rooibos tea for you."
The herbal tea from the Cape Mountains was another of Isabella's weaknesses. Gary ran the Beechcraft into its jackal wire hangar to prevent the lions and hyenas gnawing on the tyres during the night. The staff loaded their baggage on the back of the open truck. Then, with Gary at the Toyota's wheel, they bumped along the rough track through the Combretum Forest. It had been a good rainy season, and game was plentiful. The sandy track was dimpled with their spoor. When they came out into the wide glade in front of the camp, there were herds of zebra and sleek red-brown impala standing out, unafraid, on the silvery winter grass pasture. It was one of Sean's strict rules that no shot was ever fired within 2 miles of the camp. This was no inhibiting restriction, for the Chisora concession spread over 10,000 square kilometres. The camp overlooked the glade and the muddy waterhole at its centre. Later in the season, when the water dried up, the game would migrate. Then Sean would be obliged to pack up this entire camp and follow them down the escarpment to his other campsite on the shore of Lake Kariba. The row of green tents was set back discreetly within the forest, each with its own shower and earthen toilet standing behind it. The dining tent was surrounded by a thatch-walled boma, which was open to the sky. The canvas camp chairs were set around the campfire, great logs of leadwood and mapani, which were kept burning day and night. The camp servants all wore crisply starched uniforms, and Isaac, as camp butler, sported a crimson sash over one shoulder. The portable generator provided lighting and power for the bank of refrigerators and deep freezers in the mud-walled pantry. From his thatched kitchen, the chef conjured up a sequence of gourmet dishes. There were all the refinements of what was known as a Hemingway camp. Chief amongst these were the tubs of ice on the bar table and the regiments of liquor bottles drawn up in ranks. There were 5 different brands of premium whisky and 3 of single malt.
a Grand Cru Chablis Vaud d'Isère, reposed in a silver ice bucket. There were also the ingredients for Pimm's No. 1 and Bloody Mary, to cater for those with more mundane tastes. All the glasses were Stuart crystal. The type of clients who could afford the safari fees expected and made damn sure they got these basic necessities of life. The uniformed attendants had filled the tanks of the individual showers with piping hot water. While the guests washed off the dust and grime of their travels, they unpacked and laid out their safari clothes in each tent. Bathed and refreshed, the family gathered at the campfire, and Shaza glanced at his wristwatch.
"Bit early for a peg?"
"Nonsense," said Gary. "We're on holiday." He called the barman to take their orders. Isabella sipped her cold white wine. For the first time in almost 2 years she felt safe and at peace, and incongruously she thought of Michael. He was the only thing missing. She watched the procession of beautiful wild animals coming down to drink at the waterhole, and listened to her father and Gary with only half her attention. They were discussing Sean's client. He was a German industrialist named Otto Heider. "He's 20 years older than Sean, but they are soulmates. Both of them are thrusters. God, they take some chances together," Shaza told them. "The more hairy and dangerous the action, the more old Otto loves it. He won't hunt with anybody except Sean." "I had Special Services run a full report on him," Gary nodded. Special Services was a closed section of Courtney Enterprises whose director reported directly to Gary. It was his private intelligence system. It dealt with everything from company security to industrial espionage. Otto Heider is a player, all right. The list of his assets runs to 4 typed pages. But he's a wild player. I don't think we should get financially involved with him. He takes too many chances. According to my calculations, he's undercapitalized by at least 3 billion Deutschmark.
I agree, Shaza inclined his head. He's an interesting character, but not for us.
Do you know he brings his own blood bank on safari just in case he gets stamped on by an elephant or hooked by a buffalo?
No, I didn't know that. Gary sat forward in his camp chair.
Fresh, sweet blood, Shaza smiled. On the hoof, so to speak. Self-administering transfusions.
What does that mean? Even Isabella was interested.
He brings 2 qualified nurses with him, both blonde, both beautiful and under 25 years old, both blood type AB positive. If he needs blood, he can tap it straight off one of them, and at the same time have expert nursing care.
Gary let out an admiring snort of laughter.
And even if he does not need blood, there are still extremely useful items to have on a safari. The transfusions simply flow in the opposite direction.
You are disgusting, Gary, Isabella smiled.
Not me. Old Otto is the disgusting one. I think I'm changing my opinion of him. We might still do business together. Such forethought is most commendable.
Forget it. Otto is flying out first thing in the morning with his 2 nurses. The client we're really interested in arrives tomorrow afternoon. Sean will drop Otto in Salisbury and bring the other one back.
Shaza broke off and shaded his eyes, staring out across the wide glade in front of the camp. I think I can hear Sean's truck. Oh, yes, there he comes.
The tiny shape of the hunting vehicle darted out of the forest edge a mile away across the open grassland.
Master Sean is in a real hurry.
The sound of the truck engine mounted to a roar. A tall column of dust rose in the still evening sky. The animals at the waterhole panicked and galloped for the trees. As the distance closed rapidly, they could make out the occupants of the open Toyota. The cab and the bodywork had been removed, and the windscreen laid flat over the engine bonnet. On a high, rare seat were 4 figures. Sean's 2 black trackers in khaki fatigues and 2 white women. These, Isabella presumed, were the German nurses, for they fitted the description, young and blonde and pretty. In the front passenger seat was a middle-aged man dressed in custom-tailored safari clothing. He wore gold-rimmed spectacles and a leopard-skin band around his Stetson. He exuded the air of jaunty confidence that marked him as Otto Heider, the client they had been discussing. Sean was at the wheel of the speeding Toyota, and Isabella could not restrain herself. She jumped up from the camp chair and ran to the gate of the boma. Sean wore a bush shirt with 2 heavy-caliber brass cartridges in the loops of his breast. His shirt sleeves had been cut away at the shoulders so that his arms were bare. The muscles were tanned and glowing with abundant health,
as though they had been oiled. His shoulder-length hair was cut in a Prince Valiant bob. The Comanche-style leather thong around his forehead could not restrain the shimmering jet-black locks that danced and fluttered like a flag around his head as he drove the truck at high speed up to the entrance of the boma. He hit the brakes so hard that the heavy vehicle spun into a broadside and came to a halt in a billowing cloud of its own dust. Sean leapt out and strode towards them. His khaki shorts were cut away high on the thighs, and his sockless feet were thrust into kudu skin veldskoen.
"Sean!" Isabella let out a happy cry, but he brushed past her with an expression of dark fury on his face. She stared after him in bewilderment.
Sean ignored his father, as he had his sister, and stopped in front of his younger brother.
"Just what the hell do you think you're playing at?" he asked in a voice that rang with cold fury.
And Gary's happy grin faded.
"I'm glad to see you also," Gary's tone was mild, but his eyes sparkled with annoyance behind his spectacles.
Sean reached down and seized the front of Gary's shirt. With one clean jerk, he lifted his brother out of the canvas chair. It was a feat of brutal strength, for Gary was a big, solidly built man.
"Let me tell you a little secret," Sean said. "I spent 4 days getting into position for a shot at the only decent bull I've seen all season. At the critical moment, you come barging in like von Richthofen and rev the hell out of us."
"Oh, look, Sean, I didn't—" Gary tried to placate him, but Sean wasn't even listening.
"You goddamn pen-pushing office waller, you soft-assed tourist-playing tough guy. Who the hell are you trying to impress?"
"Sean," Gary held up both hands, palms open.
"Come on, be reasonable. How was I to know?" "Reasonable? When you shoot up my concession and chase the hell out of my jumbo? Reasonable? When you screw up my best client and the last shot we'll get at a big bull, the safari?"
"I said I'm sorry."
"If you're sorry now, just think how sorry you're going to be 5 minutes from now," said Sean.
With his left hand still gripping Gary's shirt, he shoved him backwards. Instinctively, Gary resisted. Instantly, Sean reversed the pressure, and it took Gary by surprise. Sean did not cock his right hand. He threw the punch only 5 inches, but the full power of his broad, muscled shoulders was behind it, and Gary was moving into it. Gary's teeth clicked together in his jaw. As he staggered backwards, his spectacles spun from his head. The camp chair caught him at the back of his knees. He went over backwards, falling heavily and awkwardly.
"Damn it, that felt good," said Sean, clenching and unclenching his right hand as he moved around the overturned chair to reach him again.
"Sean," Isabella recovered from her shock. "Stop it, Sean, leave him alone."
She ran forward to interpose herself between her brothers, but Shaza caught her arm to restrain her. Although she struggled to be free, he held her easily. Gary struggled into a sitting position. His expression was dazed. A little trail of blood crept out from one nostril, and he tried to sniff it back. Then he lifted his hand and smeared it across his upper lip. He held the bloodied hand close to his myopic eyes and inspected it with disbelief.
"Come on, big shot," Sean was standing over him. "Get on your feet, I've been saving up for this."
"Leave him alone, Sean, please."
Isabella hated the violence and the blood and this terrifying anger between two people she loved so dearly.
"Stop it, stop it."
"Quiet, Bella,"
her father shook her sharply. "Keep out of this."